Okay, Parshas Lech Lecha, the second Aliyah. Second Aliyah is a story into itself, and it's a story, meaning it's a challenge, it's an Nisayon. And this is counted as one of the Nisyonos of Avraham Avinu. And we know that the Mishnah tells us in Pirkei Avos that Avraham had 10 Nisyonos, that's the tradition. How exactly you count the Nisyonos is subject to machlokes among the Rishonim, there and elsewhere, but it's agreed that this constitutes one of his Nisyonos, this traumatic episode in Mitzrayim with the taking of Sarai and what had to happen in order for her to be released. So this constitutes one of the challenges, one of the Nisyonos that Avram had to endure. And the whole concept of Nisayon is a difficult idea, what exactly Nisayon is meant to accomplish. The language, it sounds like it's a test. It sounds like HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs us to prove ourselves to him. And that's clearly a difficult concept. It's hard to imagine that he needs us to prove so that he'll know. He knows everything, so he knows what we're capable of. He knows what we're all about. So the idea of testing us for his sake seems hard to imagine that that's really the purpose. So most assume that the notion of an Nisayon is for our own purposes, that we benefit from the Nisayon. So what does that mean, to say that we benefit? Does it mean that we're doing this for schar? So we might come to wherever we're going through, we're enduring for schar, for reward. So it could mean that, but that may prompt one to react, you know, lo hein velo scharim, I'd rather not have an asyonis, I'd rather not have a schar. So the notion that this is a way simply to rack up points by going through an asyonis, not sure how much that's going to be a comforting response. So it could be that when we say the notion of an Nisayon is for our sake, it means in a different sense that it means that it's transformational. And the language of Nisayon, of Nes, really means to lift up. We find in other contexts that it means to be elevated, and that the effect of an Nisayon is to improve and to refine the individual going through it. And in a more specific sense, the Rashiv Kambi Avner of Goldwicht was a comment that the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos tells us, Ezehu Ashir Hasameach L'Chalko, and that's often translated, it's most commonly translated as a person who is wealthy, somebody who is happy with what he has. So we often understand that to mean that you're never going to be rich no matter how much money you have if it's not something that makes you happy. And if you're able to be happy, then you're rich even if you have much less in your bank account. And that's what the Mishnah is telling us. But the Rashiva would always argue, it comes up many times in the printed Shiurim, the Asufas Marachos, that it doesn't mean that you're content with what you have. And it brings proofs that that's not the context. But rather, it means that a person who is able to be happy with his own chelek, as opposed to being happy with something that is given to him for free. So something that you have earned, something that you acquire through your own toil, through your own effort, like the Gemara has the expression, wrote to Adam, Bekav Shalom, Yoser mitisha kavin shel chaveru. A person would rather have something that's much less, but it's his, something that he has himself earned. We were talking yesterday during Seder about the sone matanos yichya, that a person who wants to live should not be interested in the idea of receiving free gifts, which itself is going to be somewhat of a challenge to some of what we'll discuss in the Aliyahs we'll talk about, but that the real simcha comes from having something because it is actually yours through a genuine kinyan. So that's true, you would note, when we talk about the midos as well, when we talk about our attributes, that we may be proud that we are brave, or we're pretty proud that we are kind, or that we are compassionate, but unless we're really put to the test, and we have to display that bravery, or that kindness, or that compassion, so we don't know that it's real. First of all, our assessment is often exaggerated. That's something that many psychologists and sociologists have written about, that we overestimate our own virtue. But even, let's say, we would be right, but if it's not ever brought out into practice, if it's not ever made to express itself in the real world, so then it's not really our midah, it's our potential midah. So we're potentially brave or kind or compassionate or noble. But when the circumstances require us actually to manifest bravery and kindness and compassion and abilities, then that midah actually is ours, actually becomes who we are. We spoke about this morning a little bit also regarding Avraham Avinu, about how chesed needed a constant expression for him, that every performance of chesed was a part of his developing a godlike personality. So the notion of amidah, even though the quality, even though we talk about it as being something that is inherent in you, something that you have an attribute, you're a baal this or a baal that, but that's only true because it actually expresses itself. Otherwise, it's just the potential, and it's not really anything that we can lay claim to. So having a nisayon, being, even though we don't want nisayonis, we pray, we should be brought l'day nisayon, but the idea of having nisayonis when they're there could be that the gift, so to speak, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving us is that he's allowing the midah to become real and to become ours through its expression. Now, we all have, unfortunately, our own nisyonos, and the whole world's going through a nisayon right now, but we also have the benefit of being able to learn from the nisyonos of our ancestors. So we have Maisa Avos Milabanim, which is one of the major themes of the Sefer Bereishis, that what the Avos went through and how they responded is a part of our collective experience. So we're lucky that we look to have a kinyan on these midos. We have these midos also birusha. We have to own them fully. But a major theme of what we find in Sefer Bereishis is looking to the actions of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and recognizing that this is a part of our collective spiritual development and learning from it. Okay, so with that introduction, so let's look at this nisayon, which is difficult on a lot of levels. It's introduced by the end of the first aliyah, where we have the first part of the story, that there was, the Torah tells us that there was a famine in the land, and Avraham had to go down to Mitzrayim, because it was very hard in Canaan. And he says to Sarai, says here, just we're still backing up here, and then the first lawyer, just to give a little context, Hinene Yadati, Kishu Yifas Marat, now I know that you're a beautiful woman. The commentaries all talk about it. What do you mean, now I know? Some suggest, some Sorotskin writes, it means now I perceive that it's an issue, because, as the Pasuk goes on to say, so the Mitzrayim are going to see you, and they're going to say, okay, here, this guy's wife, we want to take her, so the Hargu Osiv, Osofi for you, they'll kill me, Avram says, and you'll stay alive. Imrina, Chosi, Azlaman, Yitav, Liv, Avarech. Avarech, Vachaito, Nashi, Bidwalech. So let's pretend that you are a sister. We keep a mixed R here that maybe she was wearing a face mask. Although people are getting more adept at recognizing what that means. But maybe she was wearing a face mask until now. That's why he didn't realize. Okay, so that's one interpretation also. But we put our experiences back into history. So in any event, he is worried about what's going to happen. So he tells her that, send it at my sister, and that'll keep us alive. And here, I'll just mention, even though it's still the end of the Rishon, but it's very relevant to the context of this Aliyah, so that was the context of what's happening. But the Laman Yitev Liv Avarech, so this is one of the more difficult Rashis. You always probably come across this Rashi and wonder how exactly it fits. that he says, Yitnu li matanos, that they'll give me gifts. So we'll profit off of this scheme. That's what it sounds like. Very hard to believe that that's what it means, that this was some plan that he's going to end up becoming rich through this, especially from what we know about Avraham Avinu. It doesn't seem very Abrahamic. And here, later on in the parasha, he's going to turn down the offer of the king after the war, and he's going to say, no one should say that you made me rich. And here, what he's angling for gifts, it's hard to understand. So first of all, we should note that some of the Rishonim don't have that interpretation. They assume that it means that I'll survive. But others have some other suggestions, what exactly he's getting at. Some suggest that this is a part of just the whole plan, that he needs to stall so that he makes it out alive. And a part of that is that there's going to be an interest in her because they'll think she's single, and that that's going to involve them going back and forth. And that's going to, going back and forth with offers and with gifts, and that's going to be a side fact, that he's going to receive the gifts, not because he wants the gifts, but because the gift giving will keep them alive longer, because that will be, and help them to make it out, because that will be a part of the process. They saw in one sefer that he was fundraising for his Kiruv project, because in contrast with what happened to the king of Sodom, that here he saw a certain hashgacha in how things were turning out, sending him down to Mitzrayim just when he was successful in his Kiruv work in the land of Israel. So he thought that that was Kadosh Baruch Hu's message, that he should be fundraising, so to speak, in order to become more successful in his outreach projects. So that's an interesting interpretation to kind of combine the last 2 points in the Sefer Bar Yosef. He writes that essentially he was going to do Kiruv on the Mitzrayim also, that he wanted to be able to try to be mashpia on them, that they should recognize God. So this whole plan was a combination of goals, that they should stay alive, and so by saying that she's his sister, that will protect him a little bit, but it will also get them to engage with him in this effort to win her over. So they'll send gifts, and that'll mean there'll be a interaction, there'll be a conversation. And in the course of that conversation, maybe he will be successful in winning over their neshamos as well, in engaging in the queue of conversation with them also. And so that's what maybe is the plan. Maybe that's what it means. So get them to try to win her, and in that process, he'll end up being Makarizan. Okay, so that's all before the Aliyah starts, but that's all going to be drawn upon in these psukim, so we needed to have that introduction. So, fine, so that's the plan. So now this Aliyah is where they actually get there. Vayihi, Chavo Avram Mitzrayma, Viyu HaMitrim Es HaYisha, Ki Yaflo HiMa'ot. So yeah, indeed it happened that they got there, and the Mitzrim saw the woman, and they saw that she was beautiful. So they only saw then, so why doesn't she get acknowledged before? So Rashi points out, she said that when they came also, and mentions it in plural. So I think Akiva, we were talking during Seder, what about Lot should also be mentioned? He comes up at the end. How come he's not mentioned here? That should also have been in plural. So it seems like the focus is just that Sara is not mentioned, and that there is this emphasis just on him without Sarah, and Sarah is mentioned everywhere else, as we'll talk about in a few minutes. So apparently Sarah was not visible initially, and Sarah was being smuggled in, that he had put her in a box in order to keep her from attracting any attention, any undue interest, and therefore they only discover her later when they tried to pressure him to pay taxes. And he was looked like he was smuggling in some goods, so they wanted to charge him taxes, and he kept saying, it's okay, you don't have to look what it is, I'll pay this, we'll pay the higher price, you don't have to check, and they got suspicious. And they checked, and indeed, lo and behold, there is Sarai. The Netziv has a comment here, he says, what exactly was this plan? So he thought that he was going to keep her in the box the whole time, all the time that they were in Mitzrayim, that would indeed be what would happen, and that she wouldn't be discovered the whole time. It was a plan that was destined to fail. So in the context of discussing that, and it's there right that often a Kadosh Baruch Hu's plan with the faithful, with those who are already Bali Amuna, is that he puts them in a situation where they think things are going to work out one way, and he farshers that plan. That plan ends up not working, and they get saved another way, and that enhances their emuna, that they recognize that they have to not only have faith in clear ways, but also have faith in when the path really seems like the plan is falling apart, to maintain that emuna. And just to look a little bit to next week's parsha, in the end of the parsha, which we won't be talking about next week, but in the end of the parsha, where we have the Akedah, so the Akedah is one of the more challenging and provocative episodes in the Torah and in Sefer Bereishis, and the question of what exactly that Nisayon was about, the topic of much discussion. But one angle to take on it, one perspective to take on the Akedah, is that these Nisyonos overall are about Emunah, are about faith. And the question, can one, not just will Avram listen to God's instruction, especially when you consider that the Akedah, the instruction ends up changing or ends up being different than what he thought it was. So it's not necessarily that the Nisayon was, would he do it or not, but it is how does it impact on his faith and how does it impact on his belief in God's word. And you can contrast that, to bring it back to this week's parsha, that the beginning of the parsha, Lech Lecha, so that phrase Lech Lecha, which is the name of our parsha, so it comes up here, God says, get up and go to Eretz Yisrael, and it comes up next week also, that the Lech Lecha El Har Maria, that the direction to go towards the Akedah is also said with Lech Lecha. So Chazal have a very surprising comment to say these are both Nisyonos. So the Nisayon of the Akedah we know, and the Nisayon of going to Eretz Yisrael is a Nisayon as well. And the Medrash says, I don't know which Lech Lecha was more demanding, was more challenging. And the implication is actually that the first one, that Lech Lecha of our Parsha, was more challenging. And that's very hard to understand. The Akedah clearly is an unbelievable Nisayon, is an unbelievable test. And how could we even have a competition here? But especially even just looking at it by itself. So Rashi, at the beginning of our parsha, says, Lech Lecha l'hanoscha l'tagoscha. It's going to be good for you. It's going to be, everything's going to work out there. So what kind of a Nisayon is that, right? So if you say to somebody, listen, I want you to get up and take a trip and go to a five-star hotel, and it's going to have everything provided for you, and you're going to have all amenities and all accommodations, isn't that quite the Nisayon? It's not going to sound like such a Nisayon. I think we'd all be pretty happy with that. So what makes it seem like a Nisayon, in fact, such a powerful Nisayon, how is that represented in the Lech Lecha, especially when it says, L'hanoscha l'tevotcha? So it could be that perhaps the Nisayon, again, if we look at it as an issue of Emuna, so very often we have plans, and we expect that things should work out through those plans. And it's very hard to disconnect from those plans specifically and to think that Gamzu L'Tova, that things can be good even if it's not following the format of the plans that we had imagined would bring us there. So when you say to somebody, get up and move and leave your life and go somewhere else, but it's going to be gewaltig, it's going to be amazing there. So the instinct is to think, well, why can't it be amazing here? I have a plan here, the way I set up my life, and I would expect that to be good. And to tell me that it's only going to be good if I get up and change everything that I had envisioned for myself, that's an Nisayon. That is a challenge in Emunah, and that's what's represented in the Akedah to a very different degree. That there, one of the real Nisyonos that's included in the Akedah is that God promises Avram, you're going to have a tremendous nation descended from you, and makes it clear, it means specifically from Yitzhak and not from Yishmael, And the whole birth of Yitzchak is such a long weighted base. And now he looks like he's being told to slaughter Yitzchak, that it looks like Yitzchak's going to die without ever getting married and having children. And how exactly is this supposed to happen? How could you have any belief that God's promise is true? It seems like it's impossible. And yet, you see, it's not impossible that there is a way, and that Kadosh Baruch Hu has a plan, even though when you couldn't possibly imagine what it could be. You couldn't possibly think how that plan could work out. So if that's the theme, and if that's what we often find with Nisyonos, so it could be, that's what the Nisyonos is getting at here also, that here, so okay, you think you have the plan, you have the strategy, and then that ends up not working. It keeps the tension high. You almost could imagine it, Bahavdil, like it's a screenwriter trying to keep the audience as interested as possible at the last minute. Okay, so you have this way to get saved, and then that gets undone. And now what's going to happen? What's left? How many options remain in order to survive? And yet, to survive. So that itself is perhaps a part of the message of Nisyonos. Now, as I say, for one of the classic commentaries on Halacha, the Knesset HaGedolah, so Moshe Ben Avisti, he has comments on Chumash also that are published in the back of the Sefer. You can find it on HebrewBooks.org also. So in his comments, he talks about this whole episode, and he suggests that the idea of putting Sarai in a box is that this was all a part, not that he thought that she wouldn't be discovered, but that this is all a part of creating this image that she was his sister rather than his wife, because you probably wouldn't treat your wife like that. That's why you treat the, you know, brothers, they treat sisters differently than they treat wives. So the very act of keeping her in a box, even if she does get discovered, even if it's inevitable that she'll get discovered, that all helps create this picture that indeed she is a sister rather than a wife, and also the assumption being that if they were interacting in a normal way, it would just be evident to everyone that indeed that they were married and not brother and sister. So therefore, he had to shift the dynamic that way, and that's also a whole part of this plan in order to bring about the situation as was described in getting the gift, like we mentioned, and stalling and being able to survive through that process. So that's how he understands what's going on. He also has a comment there, which is interesting, that he says, how come, you know, we saw that Avram was not a weakling, that he was ready to fight for Lot. He was a warrior when he had to be, so why wouldn't he just be ready to physically fight for her and deal with it that way instead of through this deception? And he notes, interesting point, that it's just a difference in terms of justification. When we talk about war, you know, there is a whole philosophical and ethical foundation of a just war theory. If you're going to go to war with someone, it has to be justified, and what kind of circumstances justify it. So when in the case of Lot, so Lot was kidnapped. Okay, so he had to go into defend Lot, that's a clear, just war. But when he's brings Sarai in himself, so even though it's not right of them to go after her, that he should have to come up with this whole ruse in order to prevent that, but still, he's entering into their turf, so the justification to go to battle is not exactly as clear, and perhaps that's why he takes a different approach, which is an interesting suggestion. Okay, now let's look at the next pasuk. The next pasuk says, "Vayiru osa sarei faro." Here you see it's sarei and not sarai. So they saw sarei faro. "Vayahalu osa el paro." "Batukach haisha beis faro." So she was praised to Paro, and she was taken to the house of Paro. So "Vayahalu osa el paro." So you probably would translate that on your own as she was praised to Paro. People told Paro how beautiful she was, and he sent for her. But you see, Rashi feels the hechrich to say it differently. Hilulua b'neihem, lomar haguna zo l'melech. That the people, the other people around the king, were talking about her to themselves. And they said she's the kind of person who is roi for a king. It wasn't said to Paro. It was said amongst themselves and overheard. So what's the Hashem to interpret it that way? So it could be that there is a message there also that the Rav Shamshon Rafael Hirsch, I believe, has the, sorry, actually, the Lev Avram, Avram Weinfeld has a comment, there's a different point, Lev Avram has a comment that says that's the way Rishayim work, that they're not thinking about how they're, I mean, even in this area, they're not thinking about helping somebody else, they're thinking about their own interests. So it's not that they're saying, okay, this is something the king would appreciate. They're saying that, okay, here's a person who is so beautiful that even a king would be appropriate. And they're expressing their own ties when they said that. And therefore also the kind of passive sense, Atukach, she was taken, that is to convey that it wasn't them who then took her to Pyro, because that wasn't their point. Other people overheard this and then ended up taking her to Pyro. The whole idea also of the base Pyro to the house of Pyro, so some point out that the idea was that the Ishus of a Benoah, that the state of marriage before the Torah was given was, as the Rambam describes in Hilchos Ishus, that somebody would meet somebody he was interested in, and he would just take her home and take her into his house. So therefore, this was an attempt to make her a queen, to make her married to the king. So she's brought to his household, and that was his intent. Okay, and the next pasuk goes on to say that Avram hitiv ba'avura, v'hilod tonu v'akar v'chamorim v'avadim v'shvachos v'asonu sugmalim. So indeed, so his plan seems to work as far as that point, and we just discussed a few minutes ago what that could mean, but Avram was benefited by this approach. But there's also a broader meaning to it, separate from this particular context. And the Gemara in Bav Metzia and Daphne and Tess write that somebody, a person, should always be careful with the covet of his wife, always be careful to take good care of his wife, because all good things come from her. And that this, you can extrapolate to a broader context, that just like here, Avram Hetiv Avura, in general, that's what's true about a good marriage, that all good things come because of one's wife. So the Rambam in Hilchos Ishus, so he formulates this, maybe based on another Gemara Nivamos, that one should be mastered on one's wife's kavod. He should be careful how he speaks to her, he should be careful how he supports her, he should be careful what he provides for her. As that Gemara in Bav Metzia goes into a more length also, the Gemara there in Bav Metzia is talking about onas devarim and about how you can hurt someone's feelings if you're not careful in the way that you communicate. And there the Gemara says one should always be especially careful how he communicates with his wife. And here this Gemara Nivamas is saying that we should have covered for her even more than himself, as the Rambam is noting there in Hilchos Ishus. So it's interesting, the idea of not only being careful about one's wife's kavod and feelings, but more than oneself. So what's the idea of more than oneself? I think a part of the message is that we have, as a klal, in terms of how we relate to people, we have a notion of yahavta l'reicha kamocha, that we have a basic principle of treating others the way we want ourselves to be treated. And that mitzvah of yahavta l'reicha kamocha, the Gemara in Kiddushin makes it clear, is the same mitzvah that one has towards his wife. The mitzvah he has to all of Klal Yisrael, yahavta l'reicha kamocha, he has the same mitzvah as far as how he relates to his wife, just presumably it's on a sliding scale and it's a greatly intensified version, but it is all included within the directive of yahavta l'reicha kamocha. So when it comes to yahavta l'reicha kamocha, it's essentially a principle of reciprocity, that I will treat you the way I want to be treated. But the problem is that it doesn't always get all the results that you need, because sometimes I will say, okay, I'll provide for you what I would want for myself, but maybe you have different needs, maybe you have different interests. So really, ideally, what if you have to l'reicha kamocha should mean to us is just like I want myself to be happy, I want you to be happy, and I want to try to provide not what you, not to provide for you what I think I want, but to provide for you what you want. I should want for you as much as you want for you, whatever it is. But that's harder for people to do. So, and it's particularly challenging as it comes up all the time in the context of a marriage, because men are from Mars and women are from Venus, as the book says. So there's such differences in personalities and inclinations sometimes that there's occasionally tension because husband, say in this case we're talking to the husband may think, okay, he's doing everything right and that he's treating his wife the way he would want to be treated. But she doesn't want to be treated the way he wants to be treated. She wants to be treated the way that she wants to be treated. And he's not appreciative of the fact that there's differences and there's different interests and there's different focus and there's the different perceptions. So therefore, if you want to make sure to try to get it right, so you have to overshoot. You have to aim a little differently. And don't try to treat your wife the way you would want to be treated. Try to treat your wife better than you would want to be treated. And then maybe, hopefully, there's a good chance you'll land in the right place if you have that recognition that just using the standard of, okay, this is what I want, that's probably what you would want, it's not necessarily going to get you to the right conclusion. It's not necessarily going to be the secret to success in that very crucial relationship. Okay, but in any event, but that's, you know, clearly extrapolated out the Derech HaDrush from here, because here we have a more specific context, which previously had already indicated what it means about benefiting. But so here, okay, so they got, or at least the Rashi that we mentioned. But here, the Pasuk is more clear that indeed they got the Matanos, the Hilo, Tzon, Vakar, V'chamorim, V'avadim, V'shvachos, V'yasom, V'shudmalim. So again, it provokes the question, even if you weren't wondering from that previous Rashi, but now here the Pasuk telling us that that's indeed what's happening. He's getting all these riches, all these goods. So is that really the Avram that we know? Is that really what we think he's interested in? It seems very hard to believe. How could that exactly be what's going on here? So Rosham Shnifal Hirsch notes that he thinks there's a different message here, and it's just telling us, kind of in sync of what we were saying before, about how the plan was operating. That he says, if you compare this to other psukim in the Torah, when it talks about wealthy people and what they had, it's a different order. He'll first talk about the Tzon u'Bakar that provides the resources and that provides profit to the owner, and then it'll talk about the avadim, and then it'll talk about the smaller animals. Here it's all in a kind of a mixed in order, and the chamorim and the asonos are split up, which seems very strange, and the avadim and shvachos in the middle. So he suggests that it's just reflective of the fact. He's not trying to just say he had a lot. He's trying to say that there was this ongoing plan here that Paro was trying to implement to see how he could win him over. So every day he'd send over some different gifts, and he would kind of alternate between different things in order to see what would work, and that was all in line with what they expected to happen. And Avram couldn't refuse because he didn't want to discourage Paro, because then he'd be dead. So if he tells Paro, sorry, don't bother because nothing's happening here, so that would get him in trouble. That's the whole concern he had to begin with. So his only approach was to stay quiet and to accept all these gifts, but they're coming in different ways, in different formats, to try to find what's it going to take in order to get them to be happy about the situation. So the next pasuk continues. Vayinaga Hashem es Paro nigoyim gidolim v'yazbeso al dvar sarai eshos avram. So Paro ends up very afflicted. He ends up physically damaged, and ends up having some kind of disorder. The Farshim point out that it was a disorder that would have interfered with his ability to engage in relations, which made the message clear, what God was trying to tell him, that stay away, and you should understand what's happening. It's interesting that there's a contrast here to Avimelech, that Avimelech in his comparable situation, so he just gets warned. He doesn't have to go through this painful experience. And here, Paro does have this painful experience, so what's the difference between the two? So there are some differences, but among them, the Salm Derech of Simchas Yisrael Breid, he notes that you have two different types of people who could fall into sin, who could end up tripping over a mikshal. So you have those who really don't want to sin, but they still may end up mistaken, and you have those who really do want to. So Avimelech really genuinely didn't want to, so therefore it works that he should be warned off in a safe way. While Paro, he really did want to, he still had to be stopped, but he gets stopped in a more painful way. The idea that it happened to his household also, some of the Mepharshim point out that this is so it should be clear that Sarai is the only one who's being exempt from this contagious plague, apparently. And that should highlight the Hashkafa here, that this is a message from God. So the Pasuk says, Al Devar Sarai, Esha Savran. So why does it say Al Devar Sarai, and why mention Esha Savran again? We know already she's Esha Avram. Excuse me, Avram. We know already she's the wife of Avram. So why does it have to say it like that? So the simple interpretation, Al Devar Sarai, is that because of the matter of him taking Sarai, so that's why this happened to him. Rashi has a little bit more of a Jewish interpretation, Al-Zvar Al-Pi Dibura, that because of not the matter of her, but the speech of her, that what she said. So what did she say? So Rashi says here, quoting from the Medrash, says, Omer Eslamalach Hach Vuhu Makeh, that she told the Malach to inflict him. So that's what it means, Al-Pi Dibura. Other Mepharshim say in a little more straightforward way that she told him that she was Avram's wife, and that's what ended up making it clear. So that's Dibura. And the Sefer Ber Yosef, he notes that we mentioned before about Nisuin by Bnei Noach, how they had marriage before the Torah was given and for Bnei Noach overall. So too, divorce for Bnei Noach doesn't have all the details of halachic divorce. They essentially just have to separate. So Sarai was saying here that, yes, theoretically I could leave Avram and then we could get married, but I'm not interested in leaving him. I'm interested in staying married. So therefore she reasserts her identity as Eshes Avram, and that's what means that now the king is in trouble with the potential adultery here, because she's not going to separate from Avram. She's reasserting that's her identity. Rav Soloveitchik they published many wonderful volumes of Rav Soloveitchik's thoughts after he passed away from the Meyotzer Harav Foundation, and one of them is a whole volume about Avraham Avinu called Abraham's Journey. And in that book, there's a few points that we'll reference here, but one in talking about this is that he notes that if you look at the psukim that we've seen already, so when the Mitzrim relate to Sarai, she doesn't have a name in their eyes. It says, I'll tell you, Vayiru HaMitzrim Es HaYisha. Right? They have a Tukach HaYisha. Each time they just saw her as the woman. She doesn't have any identity. She doesn't have any individuality. But when Avram refers to her, and when God refers to her, she always has a name. She's a hush of a person. We have a tradition. She was more hush of than Avraham Avinu. She was more capable than him. And other ways in which she's contrasted are certainly at least equal, if not more so. And that was what the Mitzrim were totally missing. They just saw her as a woman. Her name didn't matter. And the reality is she is somebody of great individual personal stature who should be seen as an individual. And therefore, Al-Dvar Sarai, Eshes Avram, is that she emphasized that she had to be recognized as somebody who wasn't just Haisha, somebody who was Sarai, somebody of her own personal stature, and not just Eshes Avram, which the word could have been skipped. But no, that word is not skipped, because it was her independent identity that is being reasserted here, and that Paro was until now failing to recognize. Okay, the next pasuk tells us, Vayikra Faro Lavram, Vayomer Mazosa Sisali, Lama Lohi Gadetali Ki Ishtachahi. So this question, this accusation, what did you do to me? Why didn't you tell me that she was your wife? So some Mefarshim say that it's asked as a question because he still wasn't sure exactly what was going to happen. So he wanted to see, would there be some kind of a denial? Would he say, no, she's really my sister, what are you talking about? Or would he acknowledge now that she's his wife? Rav Hirsch also notes that this emphasis of what did you do to me? Why didn't you tell me? So he was trying to fool himself, Paro, that he thought that he was better than everybody else. But okay, so I understand. You want to pull off this ruse that she's really your sister because you're afraid of those barbarians out there who would just kill you and take her. I understand that. But me, come on, I'm the king. I'm not going to act like that. You know that you could trust me. You could have told me. So the emphasis on, what'd you do to me? Lamalo, he got it to Lee. Why don't you tell me? I understand you have to fool everybody else because they're just animals. But why couldn't you say something to me? I would have acted differently. So Avram can't respond that I'm not so sure you're so different. You know, the fact that Avram didn't see Paro as different than everyone else, so he can't say that, so he's silent. And indeed, the Mefarshim all try to figure out why he doesn't have any response, and there are various suggestions. Either he's afraid to say anything, or he's afraid to delay by saying anything, so one way or another, he doesn't respond. But in any event, the next question continues that Lama Marita, So here you told me that she's your sister, and I take her to be my wife, like we said before, that was a attempt at misdoing. And here she's your wife, so take her and go. And then the next passage says, "Vayitzavol of Paro Anoshim, v'yishalchu osav v'yishto v'yeskol ashelo." So how would you read that pasuk that he called on other people and they sent him out? So it would seem like that's kind of being escorted out being basically expelled. You know, when somebody gets fired from work and they right away have him leave and be escorted by security because they're afraid now he's going to try to steal stuff. So it sounds like that's what's going on here. So, okay, just leave our country and take your stuff and go, and we're going to escort you out to make sure you don't do anything. Sounds like it's a non-trusting kind of escorting. That's indeed how some of the Mefarshim read it, but others see it as more of a b'chavetik, that they escorted him out, b'darach kavod. And in fact, the Gemara sounds like that, the Gemara Maseches Tosa, because the Gemara says that b'shvil arba p'siyos sheliva paro l'avram nishtabi b'vanav arba me'ashana shenamar v'avadum arba me'ashana, that the Dalet Amos, that's the assumption that there was a levoy, like the Pasuk doesn't say that, but the idea of levoy by a guest, that you escort your guest out. So we're learning now the whole Chosnas Torchen. So you escort your guest afterwards, Dalet Amos. And if that's what's going on, so here that Gemara says that Gemara there in Tosafot is talking about the whole mitzvah of Levaya is escorting your guests. So in the Sechar of these Dalet Amos, so he was Zocha to the Paro, was Zocha, his descendants, that the descendants of Avraham Avinu would be consigned to 400 years of slavery in Mitzrayim. And as the Torah Tzmima comments, it's not saying that as an onesh for Avram, it's nothing that he did wrong, but it's a schus that Paro had for this covenant, that at least theoretically he would have that merit, which is a strong statement about the value of Levaya, of escorting guests. And also, as he notes, the Paro wasn't even doing this himself. He was calling on others to do it, but apparently that's also called the levoy, that's also called accompanying somebody. So the idea of Yitzchak Shalom, that everything that he had, he brought with him. So what's the emphasis there? So the Ramban writes that here they've given him all these gifts, and you might think that after the truth was discovered that they're going to ask for the gifts back. They're going to say it was all a mistake, so give us back everything we gave you. But apparently not. Apparently they sent him on his way with all of the stuff they had given to him. And that seems to be a nes. That seems to be a miracle. So in the Ber Yosef, he asks that okay, maybe it was a nace that Paro didn't ask for it back, but why didn't Avram volunteer to give it back? Like we see later on, like we talked about this whole morning, that Avram, you would imagine, is not out for material profit. So, especially if there was false pretenses here, so you would think he would say, listen, okay, you have a misunderstanding, so why don't you take back all the gifts that you sent me? I shouldn't take them under false pretenses. So he suggests that, first of all, it was never as crass as that the king said, okay, here I'm paying you for Sarah, and now it's a mekastos because I see that she's not available. It was never like that. It was that this was their way of showing how much they admired her. And that's true, whether or not she's available, at least if you believe that there's any kind of lishma about it. Okay, so that's not given under false pretenses. That's true anyway. So maybe, and then the Bar Yosef says, okay, but still hard to believe. But again, this is the Avram who doesn't want to take anything later on in the parsha. It doesn't really sound consistent. So he suggests that maybe Avram also thought that this was a part of the Pirsum Hanes, that he's going to go back to Eretz Yisrael, and he's going to want to be Mefarsim, the Hashgacha of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for this experience. And what proof is he going to have? How is anyone going to know? They didn't witness what happened there. So if he comes back very wealthy, he comes back with all of these gifts that they have bestowed upon him, so that will be the Pirsum. And that wasn't necessary later on in the Parsha. That wasn't the element there. It was already a well-known story. But here, this is a story that nobody would have known about. So therefore, maybe he felt that part of the Pirsum is that he should have all of this with him, and that should help to contribute to the message. Okay, so then the next parak starts here. Vayal Avram Mitzrayim, Huvi Ishto, V'chalasholo, V'lo Timo Hanegba. So, one of the themes, you want to pick halachic topics in Parshas Lech Lecha. So one of the themes that comes to mind for halachic discussions is the topic of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, because that's the mission that Avram is given in the very beginning of the Parsha. But you could also equally point to this pasuk as significant, because you see, we talk about when somebody moves to Eretz Yisrael, we call it making Aliyah. We call it ascending.
To repeat this message from CVS Pharmacy.
Okay, so we call it ascending. So the idea of going to Eretz Yisrael, being an Aliyah, being a going up. So yes, it's true geographically. You look at a map, so it's north from Mitzrayim. If you want to go like that, that's not really up. But also the spiritual ascension is really what's conveyed. So here the Torah is using that term. That's going to Eretz Yisrael is Aliyah. And the Soloveitchik in that book, Abraham's Journey, has a discussion here as well about the whole notion of going to Eretz Yisrael now with a renewed sense of purpose. That having seen what he saw, and having seen the height of secular civilization there in Mitzrayim, and seeing how morally unimpressive it is, so he is inspired all the more so to go back to his work in the Holy Land, and therefore he ascends with that in mind, and with that new reinvigorated attitude towards accomplishing what he needs to accomplish. Okay, so the Avram Kavei Ma'od, the Miknev, Akasef, Uvazav, so he's been weighed down by all of what's been given to him. Nebuch is too heavy from all of this. And includes Kasef Uvazav, so that's interesting because the pasuk before, when it describes what he received, doesn't tell us that was a part of it, that he was given Kasef Uvazav. So Mefarshim suggests it's hard to travel with all of those material goods. So presumably he sold some of the animals, and made them more portable, and that's why it's talking about in that sense. The Oznayim L'Torah Skarav suggests an interesting idea that also the whole notion of Mais Avosim L'Banim in the more literal sense, that not just as ethical models, but also as people living lives that would be echoed by their descendants. So a lot of what Avram does here is a forerunner for what his descendants will do through their experience going in and out of Mitzrayim. And he points to some of those details. So he suggests that maybe this is a part of it also, that just like the Jews would leave Mitzrayim with all of the gold and silver, so too he did that as well as kind of a siman to them as part of that process. Okay, interesting idea. And then this next pasuk says, "Vayelach Masav Minegev Yad Beisel Ad Hamakom Asher Hayasham Ahalo Ahalo Batchila Bein Beisel Vein Ha'ay." So all of this idea of Vayelach Masav. So here the Nesiv has a comment that until he got to Eretz Yisrael, he rushed because of the mitzvah to go to Eretz Yisrael. But once he got there, so then he didn't have to rush as much. And once he got to Beit El, so then he took care of his animals himself. He slowed down to rest together with the animals. While until then, he could let others take care of it. So we also have an idea here. Rashi notes that he stopped in all of the same inns that he had stayed in on the way down. That when he was coming down, he didn't have any food, he didn't have any money, he was poor, so he stayed at various inns on credit. And now he came back, so he made sure to hit all the same points and to pay them back for what he owed them, for the credit that they extended to him when he was going down. So the Tanaim Torah, he expands on this. He quotes his brother-in-law, the Zakan Aaron, Aaron Walkin, and he explains that what exactly was the whole plan here to begin with in the Kodesh Baruch Hu's plan. That here, again, the whole Nisayinus of Amunah, so Avram is told, go to Eretz Yisrael and it's going to be good for you, and he gets up and he moves on God's command. So now when he's forced to go to Mitzrayim in order to get food, and he has to stop at all these motels along the way, and he can't even pay the bills. So it's a chil Hashem. It looks like God's not really taking care of his person. God has given him this command, and he's not taking care of him. So apparently it was all a part of the plan that Avram should come back and pay the bills and make it clear that he is being taken care of, but it was all through this process, and it's all being publicized this way. The whole notion we have, the concept of Chil Hashem Stam in Talmud Chacham, taking on credit, the Gemara says in Yuma, that makes people think badly of Talmud Chacham. So here he's careful to come and to pay back. So that comes to address that. The Slach, you know, the Yehuda wrote in his drushes, that Al-Pri Derech HaDrush, that there is also the idea that when you're doing tshuva, you have to go back and fix everything that was missing. It's a process of real addressing all the problems. So here, Al-Pri Derech HaDrush kind of represents that now going back, you have to cover all the same path, you have to cover all the same ways in order to do that. So the Gemara, Maseches Erechin, has a statement here. It says, Minayin Shalo Yishana Adam Mechtan Yishalo. How do you know that a person shouldn't change from his host? A person is hosted by someone, he shouldn't deviate from that. So Gemara quotes this pasuk, and Rav Soloveitchik explained that it's about the idea here that here you have somebody who is poor and people help him out, and then he becomes rich, so he shouldn't just forget about them like sometimes happens. He doesn't abandon them, but instead, even though he's rich now, he goes back to the people who took care of him, and he takes care of them, and he remembers who was with him when he was on his way down, now that he's on his way back up, and that's one of the important midot of Avraham Avinu. And we'll just end by noting that here it says, oh, hello, but it's written ahala, it's written with a hey. So here you have the notion also that he first made Sarai's tent before he made his own. And that seems to be another idea of showing kavod to the wife beforehand. The Sanderach, or since the little bride points out, this isn't just because of tznius that he wanted to give her a covering first, but because indeed of this notion of being the chavod of your wife more than you yourself. And Sifsei Chachamim, look over here, Sifsei Chachamim has a comment along those lines that this is also consistent with this idea that we mentioned before, that one should always be mechabit his wife even more than he is mechabit himself. Okay, so we're just about out of time. We'll read the last pasuk of Aliyah. Al-Makam v'zbeach ha-sha'asa sham v'rishona v'yikra sham Avram b'shem Hashem. And Avram declared in God's name, and so it's his message, as was his life goal. And that brings us to the end of the Aliyah. So we'll stop there. I wish everyone a wonderful Shabbos, and the image of Avraham Avinu should be inspired by his emuna and by his chesed, the things that we are currently involved in, and you should take that message to you for an inspiring Shabbos, and I look forward to seeing you, God willing, on Sunday. It should be only good things.
Thank you, Shlomo.
Thank you.
Have a great Shabbos.
Have a great Shabbos.